the Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for being up with us even later. Thank you to Joy Press for joining us on the phone right now. Joy is the author of Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. Hey, Joy, how are you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm great.
Thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us. Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. It's fascinating to me because I think we're in a golden age of television, right? With the advent of Netflix and everything else that put all this pressure on the networks to, not just on the networks, because it's really AMC and all these other stations, HBO, that could take more risks because they want, I think, because, right, they just wanted some awards to draw some attention because there's all these networks, and how do you get people to watch a network? You got to get some buzz. So it opened up this era where all these different shows came out. And I want to start by asking you about the current day. I want to go back to how things really started changing for women and find out how much they've truly changed. But I'm curious because we talk so much when we talk about television about The Sopranos or Mad Men. And the interesting thing about those two shows is they created these characters that maybe you rooted for, but you really shouldn't have, right? They were bad. They, in essence, weren't really the best of people. And that was a real change, right, in the television landscape, that you didn't necessarily have to, be the good person, right, that was the main character. Maybe they were really inherently complexly flawed and maybe not that good of a person, but you still had this rooting interest in them. Have we come far enough that we're seeing women characters the same way, that they can put out a show not only fronted by women and about women or leading woman character, but that isn't like Mary Tyler Moore, even though, you know, she wasn't married and, you know, we talked about birth control, different things like that a little bit, still in essence, you just loved Mary to death and she would have never done anything truly wrong. Can women be
absolutely?
Can women be a Tony Soprano on television these days?
Well, you know, I think, as you said, I mean, we loved these characters, even though, you know, maybe they were like shooting people or, you know, lying or torturing people. And the anti-heroes really became a huge part of this new golden age. And you know, I think one of the things was that female characters were really limited in what they were allowed to do on television. So as you said, I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was a fantastic character, and she, you know, sort of did really push like ideas of female characters on TV forward. But really, she, you know, had a very sort of narrow line of what she was allowed to do. And I, over the years, we have had a handful of kind of female anti-heroes. I mean, Weeds, which was a show that Jenji Kohan created even before Breaking Bad. I mean, she created the show about like a suburban mom who becomes a drug dealer to kind of support her kid's lifestyle, her family's lifestyle. And that was kind of like a real hint of you know, what we might see if women were allowed to kind of be bad like the guys. And we've increasingly started to see, you know, female characters and a lot of female TV creators kind of, you know, yearning to like create these like not necessarily bad, but just much more complicated and dark characters. And, you know, it might just be like somebody like Mindy Kaling created for the Mindy Project, just like a really, you know, kind of wild and, you know, problematic character. It could be, you know, the characters on Orange is the New Black, where, I mean, these are women who are in jail for, you know, committing a range of crimes. But yes, I mean, you're definitely seeing, you know, female characters on TV kind of fighting for their right to be, you know, evil, obnoxious, flawed, for sure.
Let's talk about how women started revolutionizing, because I thought you would only really go back as far as maybe Roseanne and Diane English, but really you start talking about Marlo Thomas and Lucille Ball and how they started changing things. But it was very interesting to read about. I guess, you know, I don't know the history of television that well, and I know that they were famous people who then had shows, but it's fascinating that you would think they're rich and famous and powerful, they have these hit shows, but they couldn't play it in the same way that a man would have running those shows, right? That Marlo Thomas said, here I am writing the checks and doing everything, yet I am playing down to these guys because I don't want to intimidate these guys that I do need, because it's mostly right male comedy writers in Hollywood at the time, or New York, wherever she was taping. She needed those people. So instead of being able to just be the boss and be who she really was on that show, she had to placate the men, didn't she?
Yeah, I mean, that was really interesting to read that far back, that the ways that women kind of had to work the system, and I mean, actually, I think much later than that, you had I had women who said to me, you know, that they were always kind of struggling to not make men feel uncomfortable or intimidated, and you know, you were always sort of trying to navigate that role of like, trying to get what you wanted, but not, you know, not make people feel like you were threatening them. So, I mean, certainly, you had women like Marlo Thomas. I mean, Mary Tyler Moore was very much in charge of her own show, but a lot of the time they were co-creating it with their husband. So Mary Tyler Moore created her show with her producer husband. Lucille Ball did the same. And there was a real sort of tradition of that. Even Murphy Brown, Diane English was the genius behind it. She, you know, was the writer and the producer, but she originally kind of co-created it with her husband. So I think that was a way of having it be a little bit less intimidating to male executive. I mean, to the male writers, and male executives felt a little bit more comfortable, perhaps, dealing yeah. with the male partners. And I mean, that's certainly not the case today, unless, you know, unless someone has chosen to, you know, to have a male partner. But in the old days, that definitely seemed to make the industry feel more comfortable.
Well, I was amazed to read that Lucille Ball, who was a star in movies, maybe not, you know, the ginormous sexy star of that we think of, the ingenue, but she was a star in her own right in film before she made the transition, right?
Right. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so
she was a B-movie star, I think.
Okay.
Not quite,
but sure.
Yeah, as you said, not the big movie star.
So her and her husband, Desi Arnaz, want to do this TV show, and the network execs aren't buying it. So they actually took it on the road, you said, to convince people this could be a hit. And that's an amazing thing to think about somebody doing, especially somebody that was already a bit of a celebrity at the time, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that you find with a lot of the women that I talk about in the book is that they figured out ways to kind of sneak in, and you know, they often had to go the extra mile to you know, to make it work. And yeah, I mean, she and her husband, you know, who was a sort of Cuban performer, you know, had to kind of go out there and prove that there was an audience. You know, because all the way along, I mean, really until the present, there's always been this a sense that, like, you know, women were a kind of niche.
Yeah.
Even though we're half the population, like, we're just, you know, a particular taste that not everyone's going to want to see.
And I have to imagine for Lucille Ball at the time, I imagine there were two strikes against her, being a woman, but then having this Cuban husband with this thick accent. I could just see all the white old executives sitting in the room going, what are we going to do with this redhead and this, you know, you would imagine that was really an uphill battle for them.
Absolutely. And she became incredibly important. I mean, not just because she was so funny, but, you know, it really, I think, opened up a new pathway in terms of, you know, how women could be funny in public, and certainly became a huge influence for an awful lot of, you know, comedians and actresses and writers.
When I don't know if you watched the Academy Awards a couple weeks ago, but they did a lot of empowering women clips and things like that with the whole Me Too movement that's going on this year. And I remember they were interviewing Gina Davis, and she talked about when Thelma and Louise came out and became such a huge success that she said people were saying, this changes everything. There's going to be all these female-led, female-driven films now. This is going to change everything. And she's like, but it didn't. And nothing really changed at the time. And I wonder, was there a particular moment in time that things did change for women in television, that somebody finally broke through? Because there's all these success stories of Lucille Ball and Marlo Thomas and Diane English and Roseanne, but was there a moment that did truly change the way executives thought and made them say, wait a minute, we're missing out on a whole untapped market here of for the viewers and for talent that maybe we're not using?
Well, that's the sort of great mystery is, you know, you have these moments, and it seems like this has got to change everything. And then it kind of goes back again. So you have something like, I start the book really properly with kind of Murphy Brown and Roseanne. They both premiered in 1988, a month apart from each other. And they're both these like incredible characters, very, very different characters, but both like really strong, funny, aggressive, and it seemed like those shows were huge, 20, 30 million people watching them. You know, they were central to American culture. And it felt like, okay, you can't go back after that, right? And yet, it really wasn't exactly followed up on. And, you know, you had a show like Sex and the City that was so important. It really helped put HBO on the map, and it, you know, seemed like really broke so much ground, and it meant so much to so many people. And yet, you know, that wasn't really followed up upon. And so, you know, you keep having these things, and it felt to me like around kind of 2011, 2012, that kind of area, you had a explosion of shows, you know, Girls and New Girl and Orange is the New Black and, you know, Broad City, Transparent. I mean, you had Shonda Rhimes and her slate of shows kind of, you know, doing incredibly well on network television. And that was a moment for me when I thought, okay, something is really happening, and it's going to be very hard to go back after this. The you know, enormous amount of talent, the range of shows, and since then, frankly, it's just gotten, you know, it's just gotten bigger. And every year there have been, you know, like another dozen shows created by women that are kind of, you know, totally new, different kinds of female characters. And so, you know, my sense right now is it would be very hard to turn back. And so I think, you know, we're sort of in the middle of a golden age, the beginning of a golden age, I think, of, you know, this kind of these female shows.
We're speaking with Joy Press. The book is Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. We'll talk a little bit more about those women, who they are, and how they're revolutionizing what we're watching next. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. The Matt Bubala Show, 720 WGN. We're chatting with Joy Press, the author of Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. You know, it's so I was looking up during the break, Joy, and you were saying 2011, 2012 is kind of where things really took the permanent change. And I was thinking and looking up that Netflix started in 2010. And I wonder if, you know, I wonder because I'd like to give credit to the executives that they finally woke up and realized that these women are talented and amazing and can do all these great things. I think it was the pressure of the economics that probably forced their hand as much as anything. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, we're in a really transitional moment with television, and, you know, you used to have 3, 4, 5 major networks that kind of had a lock on everything, and, yeah, and they were the gatekeepers. And now, as you said before, you have all these cable networks, and then now you have streaming networks. So you have Netflix, you have Amazon, Hulu, and so it's opened up a huge array of slots for TV shows, for new creators. They're a lot more open. They need more content, and, you know, they don't necessarily have the leverage that the networks had. So they've definitely opened up a lot of doors for women who have been struggling to get their stories, you know, on television. And so a lot of these shows that we were talking about that have kind of premiered in the last 5 years have showed up on the streaming networks, you know, and you have a show like Transparent by Jill Soloway that, you know, really kind of made Amazon's reputation. You have Orange is the New Black, which helped put Netflix on the map as a kind of place to binge. An awful lot of these shows, I think, have benefited from, you know, the kind of chaos of so many networks competing for attention.
Yeah, absolutely. That's for sure. Now, what kind of ground is being made as far as pay? We just saw a story, I think it was earlier this week, on the show The Crown, which is a huge hit for, it's Netflix, right? Is that what it's on? The Crown?
Yeah.
Or is it Amazon Prime? One of the two. And that the Queen is not making as much money as she should. The male is it the King? I guess is making more. But the show's kind of about her, and here she is making less, which doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You wrote in the book, I think, I want to say that I saw a statistic that when a female is running a show, there's 25% more, or 25% of the staff will be made up of females, whereas if they're men running the show, it's just much a smaller amount. How is the pay gap working out when women are running the show? Do we know, are the women that are running the shows able to dictate those decisions as well, or are those so higher up that the equality gap as far as pay is still a mess?
Yeah, I don't know that women. I don't have the statistics on that, and it's a lot harder to come by the statistics on money. But I don't know that women are able to. They're certainly, when women are in charge, they're definitely hiring a much higher proportion of women. I mean, it's a much more even playing field. But I think anecdotally, women are still being paid less. And, you know, I think that, yes, when they are in charge, they're going to even the playing field for money too. But, you know, they themselves, tend to, pull in less money than the male creators. And, you know, I think Hollywood is has all kinds of strange systems. So the Crown, I think the explanation, you know, was that the male actor, had a higher quote. You know, I mean, he had a higher, you know, salary coming in because he had a more successful TV show. And so, you know, there are all of these rules in the industry and systems that kind of make it very hard for women to get a deal. And frankly, it makes it hard just to get up on the ladder because, you know, a lot of it is done by word of mouth, by people you've already worked with. And, so, you know, sometimes women have a hard time even just getting a foot in the door, let alone getting paid equally.
Yeah. It is tough, isn't it? Because there are things like that. Like if I was suddenly starring in a show with, I don't know, Cindy Crawford, and I was the star of the show and she's just the part-time person, they're going to pay her a ton more because they need Cindy Crawford to sell the show, right? It would be something like that. I imagine it doesn't work as often, nearly as often, in favor of women. But there is that at play there where your fame helps bring in some of it, the work you've done, what they think you're going to bring to the show. But then it's 2 and 3 years in when the people aren't getting paid the same amount that really drives you crazy. When Mark Wahlberg is getting paid $5 million for reshoots and Michelle Williams is getting nothing, basically, for a film. And different things like that are always stunning. Do you think that stems down to just sexism? Or is there also just, you know, it's amazing to me. The most amazing part of the Michelle Williams, Mark Wahlberg story was that they're both repped by the same agency.
And that's the thing. Yeah. That was really awful. That was a really awful story. And I think part of the conversation that we're having right now is, these invisible rules and these invisible systems and negotiations that are happening. And, you know, if people were unconscious of them before, they're not unconscious anymore, right? So we're all sort of being forced to, like, see all of these invisible lines and say, well, wait, this really isn't fair. How do we fix this? And so people are trying to figure out system, you know, like the inclusion writer that, you know, came up at the Oscars, trying to figure out, like, are there ways that the agencies can, you know, be more fair when they're negotiating their fees for their female stars as well as their male stars? Are there ways that we can make sure that, you know, people are being considered in, you know, for roles and being paid the same? So, it feels like a good thing that people inside the industry, but also outside the industry, are just like thinking about it for the first time.
We only have a minute left, but how do you feel the state of everything is now? Now that we've had all of these female-led shows, I would assume that everything doesn't happen at once, right? We have had all these female-led shows, which means that there should be more women gaining positions of power. There should be more young women coming up as writers. Do you feel that we're headed in a good place, or do you think there's sort of a false, like when President Obama got elected, we thought racism was over. Did we get to a place here where we think, oh, see, we saw this. There's all these women everywhere. It's fine.
We didn't solve it, for sure. And you know, as we said before, like, you know, it tends to be like two steps forward and one step back. But, you know, the fact that there are so many talented, women writing and directing and acting means that there is now this huge pool of talent, and there's all these cool shows. So I don't see it, you know, going back. And you know, hopefully we don't let it go back. I mean, I think we want to see, you know, a lot of kind of as many different kinds of stories as possible, and as many different sort of ways to be a woman on TV as possible. So I feel optimistic about it.
The book is called Stealing the Show, How Women Are Revolutionizing Television. Joy Press is the author. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
Thank you.
All right. Have a great night. Joy Press, Stealing the Show. You can visit her at joy-press.com.